Welcome to the Premium Way podcast, a space where premium is not reduced to aesthetics or price tags, but understood as identity, as a way of life. In here, we operate at the intersection of psychology, perception, strategy, leadership, and the invisible signals that decide who gets chosen, trusted, and remembered. Our philosophy? Ditch the stereotypes. Ditch the idea that premium has only one face. Premium was never meant to be sterile. It was meant to be rich in character, reflective of your true core and your dream buyer's deepest desires. Like the finest wine, layered, complex, unique, unmistakable to those who know what they are tasting. Refined without losing its edge, unafraid to be different, and impossible to confuse with anything else. This is the room where the ordinary stops applying. This is where standards are set, not followed, and where premium stops being something that you chase and becomes something you embody. This is your permission slip to succeed your way. I'm your host, Yasmin, and this is The Premium Way. We are back with another episode that I'm incredibly excited for. And this one got inspired by a one-on-one conversation I'm just having with my clients around her selling out her rooms and the objection that she's getting here and there. So we just went into the entire topic of objections and talked through it, and she wanted me to share my perspective. And while I was riffing to her, I was like, wait a minute, this would actually be a perfect podcast episode as well, especially since the previous episode is about price raises. And we all know it. After a price raise, we get a little sensitive sometimes around holding that new level. And when on that new level, we are met with an objection, our nervous system can contract a little bit and be like, ooh, am I actually ready for this level? Can I actually hold this? Can I deliver here? Will I disappoint? And all these things that we basically addressed in episode number 5, the price raises, and whether you're ready for it or not, start to be really put to the test. So what I really, really want to point out is that objections aren't invitations to lean into trying harder. What do you want to do? What do you want to equip yourself with as a premium leader when it comes to your soft skills is not just linear listening, but hearing on a meta level. What does that mean, Yasmin? Can you please just translate it into terms that normal human beings can understand? Yes, of course I can. With absolute pleasure. So not just listening in a linear way, but hearing on a meta level means hearing what is said beyond just the words on the level that the client or prospect addressed. When I say X, you or your job as a premium leader is to hear what I'm saying beyond what I'm verbally expressing. And we're going to get into that throughout this episode. But I just want to preface again, it is not about trying harder, pushing harder, persuading harder when we're being met with objections. And I have my very own stance on handling objections. And it might contradict what social media tells you on a regular basis. There are certain objections that I simply prefer not to handle. And there are indeed valid objections where your job is not to push someone through, but to actually say, you know what? Right. This is neither the aligned time nor the aligned room for you, maybe. And that is okay. We can let that be okay. Not every single objection has to be handled. That is my very upfront stance. But most often, objections aren't real objections, as in a true lack of readiness or trust or even money. Usually, objections are projected self-sabotage, and they have nothing to do with you or your offer. It's not about opposing you. And that's why I'm inviting you not to lean into defensiveness or trying harder or pushing harder. When someone is objecting, no one is attacking you. That is important to really anchor in. An objection is not an attack that you have to defend. And you might listen to this and be like, yeah, logical, of course. But I'm speaking specifically to your nervous system right now. An objection is not an attack that you have to defend. And speaking of attacks, this might be a little inappropriate humor, but as I'm sitting in Dubai right now, and we're basically dealing with Iranian missiles and drones that are being intercepted and fighter jets being on the sky, it's possible that you hear a noise here and there. I'm inside, I am safe, but you just hear what's going on outside. It's not as bad as the media portrays it, but obviously we want to be mindful and not play the situation down. But just in that moment that I was talking about attacks, there was a fighter jet above our heads. So I just had to speak on it for a second. Now, back to the topic. Objections are not attacks that you have to defend. Objections usually are projected self-sabotage, a nervous system response to desire and risk, and the client's or prospect's own capacity. And people don't object because they don't want the thing. They object because they do. If I didn't want something, I could simply say I don't want it. I wouldn't need an objection, right? And so being a premium leader, again, doesn't mean we collapse into persuasion when we're being met with an objection. It means that we expand the other person's capacity to decide by meeting them with curiosity and with compassion. Now, compassion doesn't mean we coddle them and validate everything. Compassion just means seeing that the objection has more to do with them and says more about how they see themselves than it says anything about us, right? Just being compassionate for the fact that their nervous system is having a response right now to the decision that they are about to make. And so what I don't agree with is how personally objections are being taken and how it's commonly taught, right? Even if you go around social media and you see all these reels or posts or videos or podcast episodes or scripts, trainings, courses, whatever, around how to handle an objection. When someone, for example, says, I need to think about it, you're being taught to meet that person with, okay, what else information do you need? As if it's a purely logical, cognitive decision. It is not. Because objections are rarely about that. They are rarely about logic or actually lack of information. They are about identity expansion, fear of visibility, fear of failing publicly, fear of being seen wanting something big and then not quite getting it right. Objections are nervous system contractions. And when someone says, for example, I need to think about it, what if it's not about them lacking information? What if it's about them knowing this would change their life? And they need a second to breathe through committing to expanding their capacity to hold that new level. And you can listen to this and think to yourself, oh my God, this is such a spiritual take. But again, this is hearing and recognizing on a meta level. And that gets you so much further, and that gets you into so much better client relationships as well. So premium sales, as we view it in my world, is not about overcoming objections by pushing harder or persuading. It's about really understanding what the objection protects. And once you see that, you stop selling like everyone else. You probably know it from yourself, not even just from your professional experience, but even from private backgrounds. Think about having an argument with someone, and someone is so in their spiral that you can't get through to them, and more logic doesn't help because someone is in an irrational nervous system activation. Words don't really do shit. Pardon my French, but they don't really do shit in that moment. And I don't want to say that everyone is agitated and activated in sales calls or sales conversations, and that's why words won't land. Words obviously do play a part. And we obviously want to make an informed, great decision. but it's only a crumb of it. And when we really lean into understanding the meta levels of sales, then sales really become effortless. Not because we push every sale to come to fruition, but it feels so clean and clear and empowered to decide which sale is worth it to go for. So let me actually give you examples of how I've been handling objections in the past. Now, I want to preface, I'm not met with a lot of objections, and I'm also not met with a lot of I can't afford it objections. Recently, I've actually found out that some people are quietly and silently watching from the outsides and projecting that they can't afford my work anyways without ever having asked me. But unless something is directly brought forward to me, I don't see it as an actual objection and just leave it as a projection that informs perhaps how I'm going to move forward strategically when it comes to my brand, my content, and so on and so forth. But that's besides the point. So let's get into the first example. A client that I have been working with before came to me, and at that time, that client ran a business with a co-founder, two women running one company. Great. And she inquired about a birthday offer of mine, which was a 3-month one-on-one. And then she voiced, hey, I really want this, but I also feel kind of egotistical or egotistic, pardon the German, whatever the correct word is here. I kind of feel selfish because it's the company's money that I'm investing, obviously, because it's a business expense or investment, but it's only me who's getting and using the coaching and mentorship. And that very obviously is an objection that is worth to meet with curiosity and compassion. Because first of all, she said she really wants this. That already gives me permission to step in. Second of all, it is a very real self-sabotage that was playing out. And you don't just come at someone in that moment and go like, oh, that's irrational. No, you have to address it in a way that really lands for them in the state that they are in the time of bringing that objection forward. She felt a little bit delicate around selfishness. So what does that mean? That informs me there is guilt playing out. There's this feeling of I'm not allowed to do things just for myself. So I addressed that and I asked her, heard, are you open to my perspective on this? Right? Asking for consent. She said, yes, of course. And I said, look, do you really think that only you are going to benefit from this? Since the two of you are co-founders, you run this company together, your own personal transformation, and it's not even just a personal coaching, it is a business coaching, also about how you intend things to be within that company. Do you think that just because you are the one sitting inside of that room, being coached, consulted, and mentored by me, that only you benefit from it? Because let's be real. If you grow, if you transform, then the company will inevitably also evolve because you bring your evolved self into it. So that also has the benefit and the results for the company and for your co-founder, for your business partner, right? And she said, okay, oh my God, you're so right. Send me the link, sign me up. And she signed. 5-figure sale. Done. No push, just a shift of perspective. Shifting the perspective away from, I feel guilty, this is selfish, I'm not allowed to do it for myself, to you're not actually doing it for yourself because you're not isolated and separated from things. Who you become automatically seeps into what you touch. And that is a good thing. So in that moment, it was about protecting the self perception and the self-image of I am a good person. I am a selfless person. I don't do anything that's egotistical. And then it was my job to show her that this is not the most selfless thing that she can do, but beneficial for everyone involved. Not artificially, but truly. A second objection. I once posted a story and one slide said, if I was you, I'd really get my bum into my DMs and inquire about the few remaining one-on-one possibilities for this year. My menu is delicious AF and there is a possibility for more stages. And then someone replied to that story. Someone I just recently started connecting with and actually would have never thought would be interested in working with me, because I was actually interested in working with that person as a service provider. So she replied, "Lol, I'm thinking about it the entire day already, believe me." Most people would have jumped at her and been like, "Oh my God, tell me more. Like, let's do it. Like, here are the options. Like, da-da, oh my God, like I smell the bait. Like, let me just hook it. Let me just grab it." My response? "Okay, I believe you. That's it. Nothing else." Because my philosophy is, we're all adults. I don't respond to quote-unquote hidden cues. If you want something, you voice it. If you come at me with, "Believe me, I've been thinking about working with you the entire day already," okay, I believe you. But I'm not going to pull it out of you. You come and I'm here and I welcome you with wide open arms, but I'm not going to chase you down or squeeze your willingness out of you. Because if you can't approach me with that, I already know how the collaboration is going and I'm not having that. No money in the world would be worth working with someone who is not proactive and self-led, period. So I responded, "Okay, I believe you." Hashtag let them come. Perfect pull dynamic. Then she responded, "Do you have short-term capacities and availabilities for one-on-one?" And I responded, "Yes, I do. What does your desired support look like?" And then she said, "So right now I'm in this weird voice space. I rage quit my job while basically starting over with my business. It can be overwhelming and I'm looking for someone to help me build momentum and kind of give me those little nudges to keep me on track and sane. I'm very self-led, but I tend to be in my head a lot. So a conversation with someone on the outside can go a long way for me to get me out of the perfectionist phase. And I also need to get more clear on my office suite. That's my top priority." And I said, "Hear you, and I'd love to support you in that. Are you craving calls, Telegram supports? What frequency? Regarding your insights, I would tend to think about either a 1 month intensive or something up to 3 months as you wished for short term." And then she gave her preferences and I made her an offer. And then she said, "Sounds good. I want to feel into whether investment XYZ is too much for me energetically, not financially, because currently everything is at a still stand. Or if I'm just going to jump into it, like if I have the capacity to make that investment." And I responded, "I hear you. Just feel into it." Then she got back to me, "Okay, I got the intuitive hit. I'm not there yet. I'm 100% coming back for you. And I'm going to treat myself to a masterclass of yours at least." And then I responded, "All right, if you want to do a 1 week intensive with me, that would be priced at XYZ. So I basically downsold her from a little bit more intense, bigger offer that was still short term, but not like micro short term, like a 1 week thing. Because I also strongly believe that if someone already is coming with such profound interest and is wanting to work with you, and it's really just about finding the perfect offer, then I wouldn't insist on, oh, but it has to be this offer and this price tag. Not because I'm lowballing, but because why the fuck would I let her go with no sale when I can let her come through with something more bite-sized? Why the fuck not? Win-win for both ends." So I made her a small offer. And then she said, "Ooh, hello, sales guilds. I love it. But serious question, realistically, what can we accomplish in 1 week? I'm tempted though." So I just sent her a screenshot of the previous message where she said to me what she needs. And I highlighted with a red marker that she wants a conversation with someone from the outside. It can go a long way getting her out of the perfectionist trees and then working on her office suite. And then I responded, "I would say that answers it, unless you plan to take longer for clarity. That is a very realistic target and goal for a week, full focus on that. Like an office suite makeover, we can basically do that in a day." And then she said, "Okay, I'm in. After all, I told you I was coming back for you. Run it on my card. That was quick." I was like, Ayo, that was a fast comeback. Here's the link, basically. And then she signed and really feedbacked such good vibes. That was definitely a pleasant surprise and a good reminder that I could probably implement something similar when selling. Not just letting someone go because the big package doesn't work, but finding a bite-sized version. And from there, because I know if people like it, they're going to upsell sooner or later anyways, or come into a longer-term thing. So I personally have zero pain to offer a bite-sized version if it's aligned. That is the important thing to mention. I wouldn't have offered that if I didn't believe that what she wanted to work on was realistic for a one-week container. Because again, I also lead with this philosophy of where there is no invitation, no one can be accepted. So don't just let them go because the big thing didn't work out. Make a counteroffer. And if they don't want to take that, okay, fine. You don't have to chase, you don't have to push, you don't have to convince, you don't have to persuade. But at least put it out there. Because if we don't ask, the answer is no automatically. And then the third little objection we want to talk about is my client coming to me and saying that someone was interested in booking a ticket for her retreat and especially interested in having a shared double room. And that person asked their friends, and basically the friends would love to come, but it felt a bit too short term for them. Now, they still have 1.5 or 2 months until that retreat happens. So I advised her to meet that with curiosity and compassion yet again. It's always the baseline that we lead with, curiosity and compassion. Not taking any objection personally, not shutting down, not getting defensive, but staying with the client or with the prospect in love, in curiosity, and with compassion. And to really hear what's going on the meta level yet again, because since it's still 1.5 or 2 months and it's not about overseas travel or anything, is it truly about this being too short term? Is it a factual short-term problem? Or is it more that it's an emotional short-termism, an emotionally felt short-termism, as in, okay, I usually take an eternity to make decisions, so this feels way more pressure-filled for me, because when I make the decision, I actually have to step up, and I'm trying to evaluate right now whether I even have the capacity for this. I want this, but am I ready for what it requires from me? This is the self-talk that goes on subconsciously, mostly subconsciously, to the point where we don't even get it. But if the nervous system could speak, that would probably be its language. And yet again, this is why meta thinking and meta understanding is a real asset. Especially if you want to be a premium leader, train that for yourself. Because in this case, just coming at them being like, oh, what do you mean short term? It's still 1.5 or 2 months. That's just going to make them feel devalidated because they don't hear it in a logical, neutral way. They hear it in a way that attacks what they try to protect right now. Again, what is the objection trying to protect? Own capacity, the possibility of failing, being overwhelmed, not being able to handle it. And these things are never rational. They are most often, they are irrational. So it doesn't matter whether you can relate to someone's objection or not, because it's not about the logical linear level of understanding. It is about everything that's brewing underneath. And if we're not able to meet that with curiosity or compassion, then we lose the sale. So to wrap this up, handling objections is very, very icky for a lot of people. But I dearly hope that this episode showed you how loving, caring, compassionate, and beautiful it can actually be. If you stop taking objections as a personal attack, as something that you need to defend, or where you need to lean in harder, push harder, try harder, persuade harder, and really can look at it from the lens of, okay, someone is feeling delicate and they are trying to protect something right now, most often a self-image. So how can I extend and reach out my hands and make this a safe space? Again, it's not about coddling. It's not about,
oh my God, you're so right. It really is that scary. And I totally hear and understand you. No. It is about a sovereign safe space that is your job to open up, hold, and frame as the premium leader. So if you like this episode and all the others that already dropped, I would highly appreciate, obviously, a 5-star rating here on Spotify or on Apple Podcasts, wherever you are listening. That would mean the world to me. And obviously, whenever you have feedback or takeaways from the podcast, do not hesitate to reach out. Just let me know. I think on Spotify, you can even comment on the episodes. I'm going to see that as well. I can respond to that. So whatever feedback you have, highly, highly, highly welcome to hear from you. And otherwise, connect with me on Instagram or find the link to my free Premium Revolution Telegram channel in the show notes. Thank you for tuning in, and you'll hear me in the next episode.